everyone, I'm Sophia Wilson, and welcome to this week's Big Boat interview. This week, I sat down with DKT Artworks co-founders Steve Keeling and Sean Trowbridge. It's 25 years since the London-based studio first made the leap into the superyacht sector, and the duo talk about how the company has grown since they started it in the late 1970s, the changes they've seen in the superyacht industry and the type of projects they've been working on, and they also reveal some of their most challenging projects over the years. The duo also discuss what lies ahead for the company, including a bold new move to transition DKT into an employee ownership trust. It was wonderful to catch up with them and understand more about the impressive niche that DKT has carved in the superyacht industry. I hope you enjoy the interview. Thank you so much for joining us today, Steve and Sean. I'm sure many of our listeners will already be familiar with DKT Artworks and what you do, but for those who perhaps aren't, can you explain a little bit more about the premise of the company and what you guys do?
Yeah, well, I think we'd say quite prosaically, we're just generalized specialist artists, but that doesn't sound very ambitious. But what we mean by that is that within that general definition, we have a lot of things that we specialize in. We don't specialize in any one thing, and we don't have any particular house style deliberately. So we've always wanted to be able to respond to as many briefs as possible.
And that's pretty unique as an organization. How did that come about? Where did it start growing from?
I think it was possibly from ambition, probably isn't the right word. It's curiosity and sometimes stubbornness too. Just thinking, that sounds interesting. Let's try that. And this is how we've evolved in many ways.
And what's your kind of background? Presumably is in art, is in fine art. Is where did it all begin?
Well, we knew each other from college days, actually. And I first met Sean when I was 18 on a foundation course in Farnham, Surrey, at Surrey College of Art and Design. And yeah, became mates then and met up again in London. Sean studied industrial design at Central and I went to Bath Academy, studied sculpture, then came back to London like you do. It's the place to be. So then we met up again and started a business. We originally were making kitchens, fitting kitchens when that was the new thing to do, and did some painting and decorating, then just thought, we've got an arts training, let's spin it a bit that way. And so that's how it just, because we're just earning money at first, just trying to make a living. So that's how we started. But Sean had worked in various things. I'd worked in theatre, TV, I've been a building labourer, and so on and so forth. And then it just seemed right. We have our own company. So that's what we did with the third partner, Nikki Davies, who was a fine art painter, graduate of sculpture. And with Sean's industrial design background, it was a good trio to start a company that was going to be so broad-based and varied.
And am I right in thinking one of your first projects was a church in Kew, is that right?
Yes, I mean, that's where I joined Steve and Nikki, just as a fill-in for a week. And that was very, very straightforward work, white emulsion and stuff like that.
Bit of gilding.
But you know, at that time we were just thinking, we were all filling in between deciding what sort of careers we were going to go on and do. And it was only after a certain time that we looked around and thought, hold on, we're still here and we don't want to be doing this work forever. At that point, let's put more work into producing things. So we sat down and we just produced lots of paint finish samples, which we then went round and touted to various designers. And really unknown to us, it was at the time where there was an interest in that sort of thing, a renaissance in that sort of thing. We hadn't planned it, but we just would go along and someone says, oh, you can do this sort of thing. Great, I'm looking for someone. And so then we just started doing paint finishes, a lot of paint finishes, and more work started coming from that. And our thought, because we were learning as we went along in many ways, and the thing that we've always, the philosophy we had then and which we've really retained is, you know, never look back, never hesitate. So that if you're doing something and you think this isn't going well financially, it's going to take too long, you just do it. You honour it to the end. And we never tried to cut corners and tried to and think, well, let's make money from this particular project. We would just say, well, yes, we're learning here. This project isn't going to make us a lot of money, but it will serve us well in the future. And that's always been the case with us. We've always looked at things, looked at it as an opportunity to learn.
And how did it grow from kind of the three of you, you know, doing what you did obviously incredibly well, and you've talked about that development, but how did it then grow into this kind of much larger conglomerate that you have today of different kind of skills and talents?
In the first place, all we had was a garage, a lock-up garage in North London. And then we managed to get a little studio, which was part of one of our partner's flat at the time. But then we found somewhere in Wandsworth. So suddenly we had premises so we could have more equipment, more space. And and we had more work coming in. So then people heard about us, wanted to join us. And it just like with the work, was mainly word of mouth. So people joining us was word of mouth. And people came from different parts of the world with different skills, college background or not sometimes, and the company just grew. And we tend to encourage people to be multi-skilled, because one of the things we've always tried to carry through is that we keep the team together. So, you know, when it's busy, when it's not busy, we try and keep the team there. So everybody knows each other, knows the way around the company, who they're good at working with or not. And when the work does come in, you're much better equipped to handle it rather than doing freelance stuff, which we don't like to do. We hardly ever do freelance. We're not an agency. You know, we're a bona fide company of 40 artists plus support staff. Yeah.
And you're here today because you're obviously very well known in the super yacht industry. How did that come about? And what was the first kind of super yacht project or yachting project that
I'll
that
leave
got
that
you
to
in?
Sean, because Sean was the
first project one. Was 25 years ago for Andrew Winch, and it was Soulmates. And we knew nothing about super yachts at the time. They'd just be boats, which he thought there were a few that people made, and so on and so forth. I remember looking at the first drawings and getting out my scale rule. And at the time, about 2 years before, I bought a little secondhand cabin cruiser, which I had on the Thames. And I got my scale rule out and I looked and I thought, that's the dining room table is the size of my cabin cruiser. This is a big boat. But in retrospect, Soulmates was only 52 meters. It seemed very large at the time, but we found much larger since. But with that, it was, Andrew Winch wanted, they wanted a Marmorino finish on some walls in the dining area, but they wanted the floor to look like a bleached Mediterranean stenciled floor. So we produced samples, and Winch liked them, approved them, and then we went out to FedShip to carry them out. And these unknown artists turned up at FedShip, and they were quite open-minded at first. And then they saw us putting on the paint and then rubbing the paint back. So, as usual with the fit-out contractor, they produced a pristine floor, and we were rubbing it back, and making it look a bit grubby and scuffing it and so on. And you could see them thinking, what are these guys doing? And then, as a final thing, Andrew came in and at the end, and he said, what would look really nice is where the door opens is if the door was catching the floor and leaving a little arc on the floor, on the door. So we religiously produced this art, and you could just see in the background, people think, what are they going to think about our work? And so we did that, and Andrew Winch was very happy with it. The client was very happy with it. And obviously for that reason, the yard was very happy with it. But we did think, we're not going to get invited back, are we? But fortunately, everyone, you know, it went well. And so, and after that, I think Steve had the next project.
Yeah, that was my first meeting with Pascal Raymond when she was working with Don Starkey. And she suddenly had all this worksheet, these two or three projects running at the same time. And she was looking for artists, people, craftspeople to work on these ideas that she had. And she was directed up to the Getty on the third floor of this Victorian building in Wandsworth, where we used to be, by a company called Carvers and Guilders, who carve and guild, and do a lot of thrones and stuff like this, but restoration work mainly. And it wasn't their cup of tea, so they directed Pascal up to us. And that was great. That was a really good meeting. It was really well timed. We were in between bursts of work, so we could jump on all the things she was throwing at us, really, and there's really interesting briefs that we'd never really come across before. So murals and carvings and all kinds of things. And that was a really good relationship that started there and then. And still continues to now, you know, with Frame of Light and Design. So that was a memorable day in the history of DKT, I would say, when Pascal came.
And fast forward 25 years since that first project, how many super yachts do you think you've worked on now?
Just
today?
Talking on the way over, with the projects currently in hand, we're probably online for 100 this year.
Wow.
It's quite a lot. Yes,
I won't test you, but how many do you think you can remember?
Names.
No.
Well, I can always use the NDA excuse for not remembering anything.
And what's your split now between kind of super yacht projects and land-based projects?
It varies from year to year so much. Last year, we had a very large super yacht project, and that took up a large proportion of our time. A lot of people in the workshop were working on it. Other years, there might be less, and we've never wanted to have all our eggs in one basket. We greatly value the super yacht market, but equally, in terms of inspiration, in terms of other things, we always want to keep, don't want to close any of our old avenues, so we still do residential work. We hadn't done a lot of restaurants and commercial work for a while, but this last year, we seem to be doing quite a lot of that. So it just varies. It varies on who's got work, who comes to us, and so on. But at the moment, we've got a very nice spread of work between yachts and commercial, residential.
And from a sort of practical perspective, how does it work? Is it still the designers? Is it still, you know, Andrew Winchell now, his team that come to you with ideas? Or do you sometimes, do owners come to you direct? How does the kind of whole design process work?
We don't market to owners. We definitely aim at the industry. We like to work through designers. And this is marine side or residential or corporate or anything. We like to work directly with the designers or architectural practices. And we're much more comfortable with that. We have had work direct with clients, but it's been very, very few of that and far between.
And how does it work? Do the designers tend to come to you with a kind of finalized vision, or is it very much a kind of collaborative process as to what you're trying to achieve?
It can vary. We're quite happy if someone wants to come to us and say, here's a drawing, I want exactly this, but I want it full scale, and we will do that. Equally, we're quite happy if people come along to us and say, well, I've just got this general idea for something. Usually it's somewhere in between. They'll give us some references and then we'll work up. I mean, obviously, at the end, it's nicer for us to develop something ourselves, but we are a facility, really. So if so be it that someone has a finished idea that they want to actually to use our skill to realise, we're quite happy with that. But in most cases, someone will come to us with a general idea, we'll produce some sketches, and then we end up with definitive samples, and then we go ahead and produce the work full scale.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is if we're talking about marine industry now, then we're talking about working, although designers will specify us. We're working through the outfitters, and we go to them quite often, and they have the most amazing setups. And I mean, they come to us and look around and they can't believe what we do is done in that one place in Ballon, that relatively small place where they've got greenfield sites and acres of land. Their corridors are wider than our offices in some cases. I mean, and superb equipment. But I think our place in the marine industry comes in. We always think it's to do with a creative reaction, or you know, it's the way we respond creatively to a problem rather than purely from a craftsmanship point of view and a precision point of view, which is what they're often about. Artistic interpretation, I think, is the term I'm looking for. So like Sean was saying, you know, we come into our own because we can take those ideas and we can offer a number of solutions, and we can develop it with an artistic eye, if that's not boasting too much.
And is there a particularly challenging project that springs to mind over the years? I'm not sure how much you're allowed to say.
There's so many. I think beyond a general idea, one of the most challenging things on yachts, the staircases, for various reasons. I had a particular one a few years ago for Here Comes the Sun, where we had to have a vine leaf motif following all the way down the stairs over four decks. And each stair was slightly different. So what we had to produce, but equally we had to work within a particular budget. And so what we had to produce was a series of molds. We carved originals and then produced molds, but then alternated those molds so that we could get the design to follow through no matter where the different panels were, so that you didn't come down each deck and think, this is just the same as the last one. Each deck was slightly different, subtly different. And then there were lots of little areas where we had to do corrections, where we had to produce bespoke end pieces and so on. But, you know, and then we were working with the outfitters in order to bond our pieces to their substrate and so on. And so, and then there was going onto the yacht in the end and just finishing off. So that was, you know, a very gratifying experience to get it all right at the end. Lots of little problems appeared as we were going along, but as with everything, problems always do appear. You know, what we judge ourselves is how good we are and how at putting them right.
Do you still feel trauma when you see a vine leaf?
No problem. If you do this far too long, to feel traumatic about it.
There's an overall trauma.
We're in a constant state of trauma, so we don't notice.
And obviously that was kind of more challenging piece, yeah. But obviously one that you're incredibly proud of. Are there any other kind of really standout pieces?
There's another staircase one, actually, which was over five decks in glass. And we knew from the beginning that, we on such a location and so many decks, there's a lot of twist. And when the boat's on high sea, especially, usually not when the owners are on board, but when it's being delivered, I don't know, say from the Med over to the Caribbean or something, and they can hit high seas, there's a lot of twisting. So you have to accommodate this movement somehow. And it was a glass-walled staircase all the way up. So we had to work with the designer to create a system that would accommodate the flexing, would create the right kind of appearance. It's quite an interesting design. We had to work with the glass suppliers on the technical side. And that was a challenge. But after several years, it's still in one piece. So we're quite happy about that. I think I probably lost a couple of years sleep over that. But
the sea trials are worrying.
The sea trials, yeah. the worst thing was the first panel broke even before it had gone on sea trials. And we think now, because nothing else happened, that somebody had been walking past one of the first panels with a ladder or something and whacked it and had to shatter it before it had been fixed into place. So, yeah, but it wasn't a good start. So, yeah, all's well that ends well.
And is that the biggest challenge with yachts in comparison to land projects, is that you constantly have to factor in that movement?
Yeah, because what we would say usually, if an artwork might weigh 25 kilos or something, flat on the wall, mounted on the wall, then that's one issue. If the thing is, the gravity, the weight is straight down vertical. And on a yacht, you have movement, you have the roll and the yaw and the listing, and that adds to the weight and the sudden movement, and it also adds to the different angles at which the forces are acting. So you should normally allow for fixings that accommodate three times the weight of the artwork. Because of those conditions, you've got to be really super careful. And I think that for the people who do glass work, chandeliers, things like this, it's especially important how much weight they allow for. But yeah, often for us as well, we have to take that into consideration. And then the other things are the IMO ratings. That, you know, this is one thing, as Sean was saying, we started off with Solmage with 50-something meters, 52 meters, yeah. And with Honeymoney with Pascal, I think that was 43.7 meters. So there were super yachts. Then the mega yachts came along. And when they get to a certain size and displacement, I think, and depending on how they're going to be registered, then the IMO regulations come in, the fire regs and so on. And that changes what you can use. It limits considerably what you can use to create the artworks. And it got stricter and stricter. And one of the things we found, one of the things that we developed in, was learning which materials and how we could use them for various locations, such as creation, sculpture, painting, and so on and so forth. So we have quite a lot of experience in working under these restrictions now, which I think plays in our favour quite a lot. So we're quite confident about working within those limitations now.
And that's obviously one of the things that's kind of changed over the past 25 years that you've been working on the super yacht side. What have been some of the changes in terms of tastes and what people are looking for and what people are, have you seen big kind of swings or trends in that?
Art Deco has always been a popular thing, probably. It's quite, I think, for some of the owners, it seems quite a manly thing in a way that, you know, it's not too precious, and they're quite comfortable with that. But for us, it's technically, it's very nice. It's an interesting style to work in quite often. And it suits the way we carve and so on. That certainly is one. But, I mean, when we first did Soulmates, I sort of thought, let's look up the super yacht thing. How many are there? 20, 30? And I just remember picking up an old copy of probably Boat International, just looking through the brokers and just seeing yacht after yacht after yacht. But back then, a lot of them looked like sort of Holiday Inns inside. They really just weren't terribly interesting. Well, they're very nicely made Holiday Inns, but not very ambitious in terms of design. But what was interesting for us then, and what's been interesting for us now since, is that the fact that there have been a lot more challenging, a lot more interesting briefs for us than we used to get, certainly when we were doing design, you know, interiors for in the UK in the 80s and 90s, where it was all quite conservative. And we've had a lot of really interesting things that have come along in the yacht industry, and I hope carry on.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of new stuff coming. It's very clean, you know, sharp edged, minimal kind of stuff. And that kind of asks for one type of treatment, but it's usually quite restrained or punctuation or something. But then you have, like Sean said, the deco, and there's more traditional ones, and people who are followed, they have their own style. And we've done quite a lot with Terence Dizdale design recently. And this is just one designer, but we've done so many different things with them, like different materials, different approaches, you know, the extent, the scope of the design within Terry's style has been quite demanding, and it's been really rewarding, I would say, because we've had to research and test this IMO as well. Mm. So a lot of new materials, a lot of new approaches, find different ways to do traditional techniques and then use the traditional skills that would still enable us to work on the yacht within the limitations. So that was considerable. So you have one design house there that's doing a lot of different things, albeit in that style of theirs. And then you have other companies where you have maybe RWD, where you have a lot of different designers there. And I think quite a good spread of style as well. So depending who's the lead designer and so on, you know, and the clients always have an influence, I guess. So whether a client will go to a particular designer because they like that style and therefore want a continuation of that style, or whether they'll go to the designer because they see the range of, you know, successful designs they do and feel that that designer will be able to interpret their own wishes, you know, that it's that can lead to all this disparate ways of working in there. So, yeah.
And are there certain owners that you've done multiple projects for? I appreciate it comes through the designer, but have you ended up kind of going back to multiple yachts?
Yeah, I think maybe as many as four for the same owner. Two or three, certainly, but I think in one case, four. Yeah.
And is that quite rewarding to kind of start to build that kind of...
It's though you're never sure whether the owners actually know who we are, because, you know, we're a discreet company, so whether the owners know who we are or not is entirely down to the designers and everyone.
But, we're okay, as long as the industry knows who we are, and, you know, we see ourselves very much part of the industry, and we don't have a yearning to be known by them. Yeah, it's nice when that happens and you get a letter or a card to say, you know, thank you for the super work. Very seldom, because they don't know the individual craftspeople on the big yachts. I mean, so many people are involved, so many people doing superb work that...
We understand, you know, our work is conspicuous because it's the cherry on the icing, but, you know, we understand that we're working with people who are just as professional as us and just as good as us. The only difference with our work, which reverting to the initial story I told about Soulmates, is that our work isn't quantifiable. So it that was a matter of building up trust with the yards and the outfitters, that when we were coming in and saying, well, we've done the sketches have been approved and there's a little sample, that's what it's going to look like, that we could actually realise this on a large scale, realise it within a time scale, realise it so it all fitted within the yacht. And that took a while to do. We understood their reasons for being slightly reticent to work with us. We now like to think that with most of the outfitters and contractors we work with, that they understand and that they have faith in us, that you know, if we're on the job, they think, oh, that's good. We know DKT. We know that we like the way they work and so on.
And we kind of, because of the regulations, potentially a bit more limited on the yacht side, but I mean, across both your land and yacht-based projects, are there any new materials coming in that you think are really exciting and that are kind of changing things up a bit?
I wouldn't tell you if I did.
We always have to be cautious about producing new materials, and sometimes they're materials that we might be using for casting. So if they don't end up on the yacht, but they're useful for when we're working in the workshop producing molds and so on.
I think the accent a lot now is on the ecological side of things, renewable, sustainable, recyclable, recycled, so many different tags in that grouping there. So within that, we've done a little bit, reinvented papier-mâché to form something called Pop Generation, which are artworks and surfaces made from recycled shredded paper from the office, for example. But we started looking into sustainable resourcing and so on. But when we're talking about yacht projects specifically, you know, you've got so many different things to comply with. It's really difficult to do everything. And on top of it, you have to look at all that ecological side of it as well. Is it flame retardant, for example? Is it suitable for marine environment, for the salty air or whatever? There's so many different criteria. Will it do the job? Will it create the effect the designer wants? So, but yeah, it's certainly an area that we're looking into. We could do better, and I think we will do better on that side of things. It's one area we're trying to find the time to look into. So I can't be any more specific than that.
And we have to be cautious, because whereas obviously an owner would like to have sustainable yacht, they also want one that's durable, where our artwork doesn't fall off the walls in a couple of years. So we have to be as careful as possible when we're doing this.
Now, I'm slightly apprehensive to bring up the next question with two artists in the room, but what role do you think, there's a lot of talk at the moment about AI and what impact that might have kind of across the industry generally?
It's like CNC, isn't it? When CNC first came out, it was the end of the sculptor. No, it's not. It's not happened yet. So a lot of owners, thankfully, lucky for us and people like us, they like the idea of things being produced by hand. And although we use CNC work, for example, on our big sculptural project, to take all the rough work out, because you don't want your artists, using their time to take out just the volume. Then you want them to spend their time on doing the fine detailing, the sculptural part of it. So CNC we've used to our advantage without losing that. We don't use it on everything by any means, but we still are able to offer and still maintain that hand finished quality. And I think it's probably going to be the same with AI in a way. It will have its own sphere, but whether it's going to take away from us or
sounded quite convincing, Steve. You just on ChatGPT.
Not telling you.
It's always been technology for us. The idea is technology going to take the place of you from, for years you've been able to produce images on Photoshop and print them out digitally. But people see that as something else. I mean, I've got a £100 digital watch on my wrist, which is fantastic. It keeps perfect time. I like the way it looks and so on, but people still spend an awful amount of money on much more expensive watches because they like the way they look. They appreciate craftsmanship. They like to know that they've been made by hand. And I think the same for us. I mean, we can hypothesize a future where an owner will sit on his yacht and think, or her yacht, and think, I really want a picture of, I want a 3D sculpture of Michelangelo's David dancing with a Jeff Koons balloon bunny, and just ask for it. And then next day, it just appears on a drone on the deck. That would be a sort of nightmare scenario for us, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think people like what we do, and there's always a market for hand craftsmanship. And the problem about AI, obviously, is a much broader one about how it's going to affect society, and that obviously would affect us all.
We've always managed to incorporate stuff into what we do, I think. And like we would incorporate CNC. Most things are done in-house. We don't do hot glass. We don't do hot metal. We outsource those things. We outsource CNC work with acrylics, for example, and things like this. So we work in those materials. We're able to work with those materials, and we know how to. But we don't want to have space for these specialists. They take up a lot of area. They have special regulations regarding how you work with these things. It's much better, and also it's better to go to, in certain cases like these, to people who really know what they're doing. They specialize in it. So I think with artificial intelligence, we'll probably find as it settles down, there are aspects of it we can incorporate into what we do, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to take over. So I think, yeah, like we've absorbed the other things, I think it will go the same way. It's up to us to take advantage of what it can offer.
And more generally, where do you see the kind of the bespoke crafts movement going?
Yeah, that's a good one. These are really difficult times for people. So, I mean, it's almost like going back to Morris and Arps and crafts period when, you know, the ideal was to be like everybody's in this, living in an artistic idyll, a crafts idyll. Nearest I've ever seen to that is Bali, which I went there quite a few years ago now, but it's just like when they have the dance, making of the food, the music, the painting, the sculpture. It's like all part of everyday life. And it strikes me that's what Morris and the people then were trying to get into, that people would be involved in rewarding, you know, psychologically rewarding, physically rewarding crafts and make things they were proud of, make things that they like to see and to be part of their lives. And I think it's still an ideal worth having. How you get to it, how you make it work, is another matter, you know, in these times. It's you'll see. It's let's say it's something that would be great if it could be achieved, if I answered your question there.
I think so. What's your take?
Oh, I mean, we've always tended to be responsive in many ways, although that to a degree has changed. I mean, we haven't been passive, but we've always been waiting for someone to ask us a question that we were, you know, we're tense waiting to give them the answer. But, you know, people have come to us with their particular styles, their particular requests. But things have changed a bit for us now because we have more of a profile. You might get someone coming to us with something that an image that they've got, and you look at that and say, hold on, that's one of our images, isn't it? And they might be inspired. For instance, we did years ago with René Decker, we did a vine tree going up the wall, olive tree going up a wall. And that has sort of become, in some way, to use the phrase, iconic, that people use that. We've seen other companies use that, which we don't object to at all, because, you know, we've been influenced by other people, certainly. And people come to us and say, I'd like another one of those. And we always try and say, well, not exactly like that. Please, can we change it? Can we make it look different? And so on. So, you know, we find that we've inspired people, which is gratifying to a degree. But, you know, we still remain the company that is there to respond to whatever your particular requests are.
And where's the future going for DKT?
Well, that's interesting, because it links back in a way to the crafts thing. And am I right? Is it the 14th of July?
14th
of July, we will become an employee ownership trust, which means Sean and I are stepping back. So the company, the people in. So rather than selling the company or something, the company buys into that, and people can retain their jobs. The new directors and managers and so on carry on as normal, you know, in the same way. It's quite an interesting model. It's based on the John Lewis model. Interestingly, there's something called the Employee Ownership Association. And it's, for want of a better word, it's a club of people who are really enthusiastic about this. They are. It's usually people from companies who have already gone through this. So including John Lewis, they have speakers from there and there. But part of their ethos is that this thing about the happiness of the workers and the, as we say, the, you know, the satisfaction, the working conditions, the joint venture approach of it, everybody's involved. And they're really passionate about this. It's quite interesting, even though they're from many different walks of life.
Yeah, I mean, the reason for doing it is partly because we have to acknowledge that we're not going to be there forever, and we have to look towards the future to have that in place. But also, we also are very happy to acknowledge that it's certainly not just Steve and I who've made DKT what it is. There have been people along the way, some of whom have left, but a lot of people are still with us. Mm. And people have been with us for, I think the average longevity of people at DKT at the moment is something like 14 years. Mm. There are young people who just started with us relatively recently, but other people have been with us, some people for over 30 years. And so they've put a lot of time into this. They've responded really well to projects, because if it had just been Steve and I without any support, we would never have got to where we are now. So it's always pleased me that I work with people who do a job better than I would have done myself. I mean, there was a particular project where, again, a winch project, we were given to a reference of two Art Deco panels by Frey Martel, and they were just some musicians and a dancer, but they wanted that to be expanded to six panels. So sat down and I did initial sketches, and I was quite pleased with the way I'd done that. And I sort of toyed with the fact, I thought, I wonder if I can find time to get away from the admin to actually work on this carving this myself. But I didn't. And so I said to Owen, who worked with us, who's an illustrator by profession, by training, are you interested in doing this? And first of all, he took my sketches and produced a much nicer, more elaborate, refined sketch from what I, and I looked at that and thought, yeah, I could possibly, if I'd spent more time working on it, made it look as good as that. But I don't think I would have made it look as good as that. And then he went on to the carving, and he, you know, I think he surprised himself, you know, at the way it all went. And that was really good from a teamwork point of view. Us, you know, the whole producing something better than the individual. And that really gave me a lot of pleasure. That was one of my favorite projects, because it represented a step up in the evolution of the company. This was about 14 years ago, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And things like that are very, you know, very rewarding. And that is why we want to make sure the company carries on. It's not just an ego thing. It should carry on as much as we can. So everything we can do to make it carry on, we're happy to do.
And does this next step mean a bit more free time for you both?
I don't know. We're not, it's not, that's the second thing. The thing is just setting it up so that we can, so that people don't feel that it's just us here. I mean, if we go away for a week, that's not the end of the world anymore. If we were looking at the company 10 or 20 years ago, we had to be there all the time. We didn't, you know, because other people didn't feel as committed as they are now. But I think now we do have that commitment.
Wonderful. Well, we'll look forward to seeing where DKT goes in the future. Thank you so much for joining me today. Thank you for listening to this week's Big Boat interview, which was mixed and produced by Naomi Wilson. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll be back with the boat briefing next week.